Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Thursday, October 2nd. I'm Ray Graff. It's gardening today, and we welcome so far Fred Breglia of the Landis Arboretum and Dale Isla Riggs of the Berry Patch. You never know. A couple gardeners could file in at some point. Right now, we have two, and that's a show. Give us a call, 800-348-2551, if you have a gardening question. 800-348-2551, or email voxpop at WAMC.org, VOXPOP at WAMC.org. It's always a popular show, this gardening thing, so call early. We have Fred, we have Dale Isla, and we have you. We got a show. We'll see you after the news. Why, hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. The gardeners are back, and they're ready to take your calls today. Bob Graves is co-owner of Fadigan's Nursery in Latham, New York. Fred Breglia is director of the Landis Arboretum in Esperance, New York. And Dale Isla Riggs is the owner and operator of the Berry Patch, a first-generation diversified farm in Steventown, New York. If you have a gardening question, call right now. It gets jammed. Trust me. 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. You can email the program, as many people have already done, at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, our number is 800-348-2551. Well, 3 out of 4. At the end of the last show, our gardeners were filing out. And I said, I'll send you a couple reminders. And they all snickered. And they said, hey, you don't need to do that. You don't need. So this time I didn't send any reminders. I assume Greg knows about it, and he is just stuck in traffic.
Probably.
But Bob Graves, welcome to the program. Great to have you here. I'm proud of you for remembering without a reminder.
I remembered. I did check the email just to make sure.
You see, now they come crawling back. Okay. Dale Isla Riggs, how are things at the Berry Patch?
Great. It's been a little frosty the last couple mornings, but since most of our crops are in unheated greenhouses, we still have lots of great things like raspberries and strawberries and tomatoes and cucumbers and zucchini and all sorts of good stuff.
You brought raspberries.
Yeah.
Yummy. Fred, how are things over at the Landis Arboretum?
Yeah, things are going good. We're enjoying a little bit of this cooler weather and a little bit of moisture. We got about 3 inches of rain last week, which was huge for us.
That was really nice.
Still dry, but
it's
better.
Nice. Yeah.
And we're planting, so it's coming at the right amount of time. So
did anybody get frost?
I did not. Sounds like Dale Isla did.
Yep. 2 mornings in a row, this morning and yesterday morning. Just very light.
Yeah.
But it was a frost. It wasn't a freeze. So at air level, we're at 6 feet at the weather station, it never went below 32.
Okay.
But at ground level, it was below 32.
Why don't you put the weather station at ground level?
You know, we've suggested, since we do have an official weather station, we've said you really need to have one of the measuring points be 1 foot above the ground, because that's the area that matters to a lot of farmers.
Yeah, makes
very
sense.
Interesting. The number here is 800-348-2551. Boy, the emails have been flowing in here since a while ago. This is from Nick. I'm just adventuring into the world of seed planting. It's a bit intimidating and overwhelming. Can the experts pass along some general advice on seed-related adventures?
The first thing I would recommend is picking up a book that's written by Michael Durr.
Yeah.
It's a propagation of woody landscape plants. It's absolutely like the go-to Bible for all of these kind of seed questions. It's not just seeds, it's cuttings. Exactly, how do you stratify them? Every single seed's different. There's so many different plants available, especially with woodies, and so many different ways to break dormancy, but they have to be specific. So, the internet works to a degree, but when you start to see, and I have done a lot of inquiries just kind of poking around to see if I get matching information, because that's kind of like what I like to see.
Right.
Do you get 3 different answers of the same question, or do you get them all same answer? And with the internet, you do get a lot of variations. So, what do you trust? And I've never found the manual quite as good as that
Using seed packets, boy, read the packet.
If you have packets and you're not doing wild collecting.
Because it's going to tell you the spacing and the timing and the days to harvest.
Yep. And most of those seeds are kind of set up for you to grow. But if you're collecting wild, those seeds in most cases are going to require something, mm-hmm. and they're not all the same.
Yeah, the other thing is to make sure that you get a good quality potting mix to plant your seeds in. Don't just go out and collect topsoil from somewhere. There can be a lot of diseases in that. Yeah. So a good quality potting mix. And like Fred mentioned, it's good to have a manual, but a lot of seeds, not all, but a lot of them, especially vegetable seeds, benefit from some bottom heat. You don't have to get anything fancy. All we do is we put out our banks of lights and we put the trays right on top of the lights. It acts as bottom heat. And then once they sprout, we just pop them underneath the lights and away we go.
Would you speed the process up if you put them on a hot plate?
You might delay the process because really? That might get them a little too warm.
A little too hot.
Okay. You know, speaking of soil, we were given a couple tomato plants by our next door neighbor, and we didn't have any vegetable soil for the pot. So I said, just put the regular flower soil in. Is there anything wrong with that before we eat the tomatoes?
No, not necessarily. Okay. I mean, you're talking like another type of potting mix that's made for flowers. Yeah. Generally, those are multi-purpose. And most of them are soilless media. So we talk about soil. Really, soil is a combination of minerals, sand, silt, and clay. Uh-huh. So these soilless medias are actually mostly all organics.
All right. The difference is maybe the percentage of peat moss versus perlite versus sand. You know, a cactus mix will have a little more sand.
Yep.
Really, in a lot of cases, it isn't going to make a lot of difference.
Okay, well, we got a few tomatoes, but they're not quite ripe. We took them off and put them in a bag. Jeffrey in Coxsackie writes, I was surprised to see my lilac tree start having new leaves and some white flowers after all the leaves had gotten black and fallen off. There's no question there, but does anyone want to comment?
I'll comment on that for sure. Yeah, I mean, it's kind of common. It's the thing is, the disease cycles is wiping out the leaves. Yeah. And lilacs, once they start to grow, they don't generally put out new set, but this is kind of resetting them. Like you lost all those leaves, and they're a little confused. I've got one at the house in a hedge. Most of it's brown, like so many of the lilacs around our areas. And then one put out a bunch of leaves, and it even has a couple of flowers popping out.
No worries.
Okay.
No worries. Just a confused plant.
Yeah, it's just, the plants went into stress, and they shut down for a while, and now they think it's spring.
Okay. Let's see. We have time for a couple more emails, then we'll take a break and hit the phones. 800-348-2551. Barbara writes in, last summer, I dug up a small 5-inch crabapple seedling from underneath our established tree and put it in a large pot. It's doubled in size overall, but the main shoot is much longer and spindly. Two questions. One, should I prune the shoot and any others? And B, when should I put it in the ground? And that's from Barbara, who is in the 845.
Put it in the ground now.
Yep.
Yeah, it's a great time to plant.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah, you want to get it in the ground.
If it's a little spindly, I wonder if it wasn't in enough sun, it might have stretched. So when you get it out in a full sun area, it's not a shade plant. It needs to be in a full sun.
Yep. Yeah, but I would think at this point I would just put it out. I wouldn't worry about pruning it.
Nope.
But plant it at the same depth that the container at the top of the soil is in the container, and water it in well. And water it in once a week between now and when it starts starts to get cold and starts to get moist.
Yeah, and I would guess that it would be best for her to prune it next spring, since it's kind of spindly. Wait until after the winter and make sure that there's no winter damage.
That's what I would say, too.
Also, with something small like that, with a crab apple, if you don't put something around it, the rabbits or the voles are going to eat it.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Uh-huh. And that's one of the easiest ways to save a tree is put some vole guards around, especially crab apples, but anything really young. And that's, something that we start doing soon at Landis. We start doing it in October, and we start putting tree wrap up for deer that like to rub their antlers on our trunks of a lot of our young trees.
Oh.
So deter them as well. And that winter protection goes on October, and it comes off when the growing season starts.
All right. Linda, anybody else? Linda writes in, can sorghum be used as a cover crop? Does it need to be sprouted first? And that is from Linda.
Sorghum is a great cover crop. What is even better is sorghum Sudan grass, which is a hybrid. It makes a great root system, and especially if you plant it, it's a warm weather crop, so it's not something that can be used at this time of year, but it's a great summer cover crop, and it's even better if You mow it when it gets to about 12 inches tall so it doesn't get too tall, and that makes it put out even more roots, which is what you're looking for a cover crop.
What would you use this time of year as a cover crop for the winter?
Rye, wheat, oats. I like winter peas are really nice. Winter peas put out a nice deep root and are often pretty hardy, so and you can eat the pea shoots from winter peas as well. Wow. So, and a lot of people use a rye vetch mixture as well.
Yeah.
Our number here is 800-348-2551. One more email, then we'll take a break, then we'll hit the phones for sure. So if you're on the line, hang in there. Matt writes in, I have a cherry tomato plant. Many good-sized tomatoes. They have yet to ripen. I'm concerned I may lose them to frost, which might or might not happen tonight. Is it okay to harvest them early when still green?
You can certainly do that. Some will turn color, some may not. What I would do instead is, since it's supposed to go back up to 80 degrees this weekend, I would just cover the plant with a sheet or something like that to protect it and let them keep growing in the ground or pot as long as possible.
If they're in a pot, you could bring them inside overnight, right?
You could, if it's a pot that
you can lift.
Right, exactly.
Well, my mom used to use old bed sheets.
It doesn't take much.
Yep, just an old bed sheet wrapped around them, and she'd save those tomato plants and let them, you know, go
another.
Because
we may have 2 or 3 more weeks without.
Exactly, get a couple more weeks, and then she'd get a lot of those tomatoes to ripen that way.
Yeah. So.
All right, let's take a break here. The number is 800-348-2551. It's the Gardening Show. Dale Isla Riggs, Fred Breglia, and Bob Graves are here to answer your questions, and we'll be back. John Schofield, heel to toe on Vox Pop, 800-348-2551. Dale Isla Riggs, Fred Breglia, and Bob Graves join us for the Gardening Show. The number is 800-348-2551. Let's begin in Alford, and it's Bess. Hello, Bess. You're on.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
You bet.
I have questions about time, and I'd love to sneak in a question about poppies, if that's okay.
Okay.
So what is growing wild all over my yard, which I love, it's beautiful, is that usable for culinary purposes?
I believe so. We've occasionally used it. I'm not a big fan of thyme in cooking myself, so I can't say for sure, but I don't see any reason why one couldn't.
Yeah, I mean, I do like thyme in cooking, especially with like steaks and stuff like that or seafood. So I do use a little bit of that. I will say that in a pinch, I have used some of that before. I don't think it's quite as tasty as normal thyme.
Okay.
It seems to be like less flavorful.
What does thyme taste like?
That's hard to say.
It's pretty subtle.
It's like subtle, but yet, sort of, you know, very key in for certain dishes. I feel like so.
Okay.
You know, in a pinch, I'd say yes. But if you have a choice to go out and grab some for culinary, I think you're going to get a better flavor out of it.
Okay, and then poppies.
Well, this is time part two. Okay. I have a stone patio, and weeds keep growing up between the crevices. And I'm wondering if I can use this thyme from my lawn to sort of stick between the crevices. Will that work?
Yep.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that will work. And especially if it's growing in your yard already, we know that the pH is actually like right for it, and it likes your site. So then you just take little plugs up, and this time of year in the fall, you can definitely
get it. It actually works pretty well for that purpose.
It works pretty well for that. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Oh, great. That's a good answer. And then poppies.
Yeah.
My cousin gave me a huge bag of poppy seeds, and she's, the way she is, just said, just throw them around. And that doesn't seem like it's a great idea. How would I get the poppies going, and when should I do that?
Well, the same thing applies here. I'd get a hold of a reference or look up propagation, because you're not quite sure what conditions those seeds have to have for how long. But a lot of times, you know, the way nature works is the seeds just go on the ground. So I don't think she's wrong in that instance, but often we do them in pots ahead of time and then put them in the ground.
All right, Bess, thanks for the call. Let's go to Joe in Rotterdam. Joe, you're on.
Yes, thanks for taking my phone call. My question is about, I have these pear trees that have this every year they get the red rust. And I've been using Captain Jack that you buy at the Home Depot to spray them. Wasn't sure if it's working, if it's not working. What do you guys recommend for this?
What are you describing? There's a damage to the leaves?
Yeah, it's a red. It's a leaf. It's a red, the leaves are got red rust on it.
Yeah.
And sometimes it looks like fungicide growing underneath the leaf.
Yeah.
I've been spraying the trees, but I don't think it's.
I think you've been spraying an insecticide, and I think you've got a fungus problem.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, the rust is definitely fungal.
Yeah.
So there's, you know, that's a fine. If you look underneath the leaf, you, like you say, you might, especially with a little hand lens, you could see these little fungal kind of fingers or threads coming out of it. Is that what you're seeing?
Well, yeah, I've been using the copper fungicide.
Yeah.
It is with the apple trees. I mean, I got a small yard. I got two pear trees and a couple of apple trees.
Are we concerned? This might also be a bacterial disease rather than a fungal, right?
If it's that rust, that's fungal. If it's truly rust, it's an orange spot, and then underneath you're going to see like an actual especially with a hand lens. But at this time of year, I would almost think you could see them with your naked eye. Mm. You're looking at these little like fingers, sort of coming off the bottom of the leaf, correct?
Tiny.
I mean, yeah. That's all preventative if you're going to
try to
spray it.
The thing with a fungicide is you have to spray it before you see it.
Yeah.
If you get a fungus disease on something and then you spray it, it doesn't do any good because the fungicides prevent it, but they don't get rid of it.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it wouldn't.
If you're using your copper, you got to use it ahead.
Yeah. Okay. If you see it, it's too late.
Yeah, and I've been doing this in the spring.
Oh.
I've been putting this on in the spring. In the winter, I actually sprayed it in the middle of winter, and it seemed to come back.
It's just the weather.
Yeah, I think sulfur or I think copper is not necessarily the best fungicide to use. It sounds like maybe cedar apple rust.
Yeah,
that's what it is on the apple in particular.
And I think that probably will go to the pear as well since they're in the same family. Mm. Cooperative Extension has a lot of great resources for home gardeners and home fruit growers, and I bet you could get online some information from them as far as what the best timing is and best materials to use for that next spring.
Yeah, right. You might be missing the timing a bit. But there's also another one called Quince Hawthorn Rust, but that's not the plants that you're dealing with. And it looks the same.
Okay.
It'll be on the Hawthorn, and the alternate host for that is the Quince.
If it is cedar apple, you could just Google cedar apple rust, too, and it'll tell you a lot.
Yeah.
Joe, thanks for the call. The number here is 800-348-2551. Gardening Today with Dale Isla Riggs, Fred Breglia, and Bob Graves. And by the way, we all tried while you were on the last call that first raspberry batch that you brought. You brought 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 different batches, and this one's called Polana. Tell us about that one.
So Polana is actually an older variety of fall raspberry. It's one of the earlier fall raspberries. Mm. Very dark in color, smaller size. That's kind of typical of some of the older varieties. But I really like the flavor, and it's especially nice for jam with that really nice dark color.
Yeah.
So we've actually been harvesting these Polanas since about the third week of July.
Wow.
And here we are in October, and they're still going.
Yeah,
they're good ones, too.
Yeah.
That's a long-producing plant. That's really nice.
Yes.
Well, that's partly fall raspberries, because as long as they're putting up new canes, you're always getting new fruit on the ends of the fall raspberries.
Yeah, I love that taste.
That's a
classic
this time of year.
Classic raspberry taste. Let's go to Utica and talk to Roger. Roger, you're on.
Yeah, hi. question about cherries. I have like 4 bush cherries. They're about 8 years old. After about 4 years, they did really well. I was getting 4 to 6 quarts a year. The last couple of years, very poor. Last year, maybe 1 quart. This year, less than a quart. The berries were very few and far between in the spring, and the leaves were mostly orange. There's a couple others that have come up nearby, and they look good. I'm just wondering, what am I dealing with, or what might I do for that?
We have a couple bush cherry plants, and ours have actually been hit by frost several of the last few springs, because it's warmed up. They've bloomed very, very early compared to what they used to, and then they've gotten zapped by frost. So that might be part of what's going on with the reduced yields that you're getting.
It wasn't a problem, the frost, I don't believe.
Okay.
That wasn't really a problem.
Yeah. So then the yellow leaves, that says to me that there might be a nutrient issue or there might be some root rot going on. Is it kind of a wet site or is that pretty dry?
No, it's pretty dry.
Are the oldest leaves, are they the ones that are turning yellow or are the newer leaves turning yellow or both?
Sort of both. As it came into like late May, early June, before they, I usually harvest them right around solstice, but the yield was just really poor and the leaves were mostly sort of an orangish brown.
When you have a poor yield on something like that, the first question is relative to what Delilah said is, did you get flowers? And if you got flowers and you don't get fruit, there's something.
I got good flowers.
Yeah, good flowers and no fruit. Okay, well, that tells us something different then. You may have had a pollination problem. It could have been a weather problem. Mine did very poorly this year with the rain that we had early.
It was really, really wet. That may have played a role for some plants.
Yeah, mine did not do well this year.
Yeah, the other thing is, since it was really dry again last fall, they may have produced what we call stress flowers. And the plant thinks it's not going to make it. It puts a lot of its energy into producing flowers. And then because it was dry, it didn't have enough reserves for those flowers this spring to form fruit.
Uh-huh. Roger, you want to follow up quickly or can we say goodbye?
I'm just wondering whether it might be a fungal problem or other sort of a problem. And I had two other trees that sprouted up close by, and they both looked pretty good. But they weren't old enough to fruit this year.
Something going on there.
It does seem like something going on. Now, you planted these plants yourself, right? You planted them?
Yeah, about 7 or 8 years ago.
Seven or 8 years ago. So there's another oddball. Looking at Diagnostics 101, we're trying to be detectives a lot of times and try to figure things out. So based on the clues you give us. So that being said, if they were containerized plants, which I assume they might have been, do you know if you planted them as container plants or did you get them bare root? How did you get those plants when you put them in?
Put them in, I think, bare root.
Bare root. Okay. That's less of a problem.
That's good.
That's good news. Yeah. Yeah. I was going to say, sometimes what we see after a number of years is plants that have root dysfunction. So in other words, a girdling root, or if they were planted a little too deep, you don't have that root flare right at ground level. The first chunk of years, they generally chug through and do okay. But then, it's sort of like time ends up being the enemy and the roots get more choked out, and if they're not right at ground level and they're a little low, then you can have some stem rot, crown rot in that quadrant. So a combination. So I would look at the stems just to rule it out and make sure that you see right at ground level that should have a kind of a root flare right where the trunk meets the roots right at ground level. If you see the stems just kind of going straight into ground, then I would use my fingers and try to, or an old spoon, small spoon, something that isn't going to dig up and hurt the roots. Scrape away and see if you can see like some root structure. And the roots should look like sort of the spokes of a bike wheel. If the hub is the stem of the plant, they should radiate out kind of like spokes of a bike wheel. And if you see them kind of wrapping around or circling, then, that would play a role because now the plant can't pull the nutrients it needs to, even if the nutrients are there.
I think I'd go back to Dale Island. Maybe we got a nutrient issue here. I'd get a soil test because if you got a whole bunch of them that aren't doing well, something happened.
Yep.
Something's different.
Yeah.
Okay, Roger, thanks for that one. While we're on the topic of cherries, a cherry tree, Deborah writes, and I have a large cherry tree. Didn't do too great this year. Nope. It appears to have a 2-foot seedling next to it. Wondering if I should cut the seedling or could I transplant it or just leave it alone?
Well, it's probably not a seedling, right?
It's probably a sucker.
Probably
a sucker, which is coming out the root system.
Yep. What's a sucker?
Well, related to plants here we're talking about.
Well, yeah. I mean, come on. Gardening show. I'm not talking about poker here, okay? I'm not going to the casino, all right?
It basically is a fast-growing shoot or sprout that doesn't have its own root system. It's actually coming off of the root system of the parent plant.
Yeah.
So beeches in our forest are really famous for doing this. Crab apples are really famous for doing this. Edible apples are famous for doing this.
A lot of these things are grafted, too, so it's coming off the root system. It's not the same plant as the plant that you planted. Because the bottom of the plant and the top of the plant are two different types of things.
So cut it down. Just chop it.
Take it off.
Right at ground level.
Yeah.
All right. Let's grab another call here before the next break. 800-348-2551. among you, of the three, and Greg Ward is AWOL here today, of the three, who wants to talk to Joan in Schenectady? Anybody?
I always enjoy talking to Joan.
All right, you're okay with that?
Joan's my
You guys
friend.
All right? Okay, fine.
Joan's my friend.
All right,
friend.
Listen, I just want to check, just make sure she's
all
not
right.
annoying you.
No, she's
Joan,
my
you're on. Hello.
Hello.
What's happening?
Oh, my goodness. It's a mutual affair of love here. Thank you. I was going to point out that I saw a tiny, tiny blossom on a neighbor's lilac tree yeah. also, but yep. you already covered that.
Yep, they are popping out right now. Yep, yeah, from all that lilac blight that we've been getting.
Yeah. Oh, it was such a hard year for all of my beloved plants.
Yeah,
oh,
it was
my.
A tough, challenging season.
Yeah. I do eat ground thyme all the time.
All right. Yep.
So okay. I recommend it.
Okay.
Don't bring any during the fun drive next week, Joan. Just do me a favor.
Maybe I'll just have it on my breath. How about that?
That's fine. Well, listen, you be you. All right. You have a question?
I do. You guys have been helping me with my new planting of canna lilies, and they did fabulous. The one question, the friend who gave me the plants, I don't know if they're okay to compost. I've never worked with such a large fleshy leaf like that.
All right, people, compost them.
Yeah, sure.
I would sure. absolutely compost them.
Might take a little longer than other things to break down, but if you can chop them up, that right. helps too.
Yep, you could either chop them up or just, you know, or put them in. The they're going to break down. You know, the usual layering type of composting system, you know, some browns, some greens.
Yep. Sweet, because I usually use the maple leaves and no maple leaves this year.
Not too many, yeah, in a lot of cases.
Yeah. Yeah. They're completely contaminated, so I said no.
Okay.
And shout out to all the gardeners who share their plants and share their knowledge with other people. I've just been getting a joy of all of it.
Well, Joan, I look forward to seeing you next week during the fun drive, and thanks for being on the show. 800-348-2551. All right, we're going to take a break here in a moment. Let's try the next, the Berry Patch Raspberry. This is Autumn Britain.
Yes.
How did this name come about?
That, I believe, is actually, it's a sister of Autumn Bliss, and I've grown both.
An English.
The the Autumn Britain is a nice big variety, also an older variety, kind of dark, larger in size, not quite as attractive and tight looking as the Polanida is.
I think it has more of a punch, though, more
a little
flavor.
More.
But yeah, I think it is more flavorful.
Touch sour.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just a touch.
Much like myself. But you know, that's
more than a touch.
You know what, Bob? I'm taking a break. Bob
break
showed
time.
Up. Greg Ward didn't. He's a nice one. Now Bob is still here. 800-348-2551. We'll be back. Lockbox is open, folks. WAMC.org. If you want to make a pledge, we are at over $547,000 in the lockbox right now. I think $547,918. If you want to shorten the fun drive, which begins Monday, and we know Joan lives for it, and I love seeing Joan, and she'll be here next week, you can make a pledge right now. WAMC.org. Make a secure online pledge of any amount. Of any amount. And we'll let you know how we're doing. It's the gardening show today. It's Vox Pop, WAMC. And we're joined by Fred Braglia and Delilah Riggs and Bob Graves, who's getting on, you know, my case a little bit here. Oh, and see, we're not even going to turn your mic on now. That's nice. You know what, Mike? Leave his mic off because he's been nasty. This email from Todd. Our butternut squash grew to huge size this year. My wife likes to let them climb on the garden fence, and as big as they grew, the vine couldn't hold them, so some fell off before they were ripe. I read that if you leave them out in the sun, they will continue to ripen. True or not true?
They will continue to ripen. They probably won't have quite the sugar content that they would if they ripened on the vine, but we've got some that we picked yesterday before the frost, and they're not quite as dark, but they're still great in soup and... A lot of people add some type of sweetener to butternut squash anyways, so they'll be fine.
Well, how would you do yours?
We just cut them in half and roast them. We actually grow a variety called Honey Nut that is really super sweet. And I tell people if they put any sweetener on it, it makes it too sweet.
Well, all right.
Yeah. They're little, they're good for, you know, two people can eat one squash for dinner.
All right, here's a quick one from James in Smallwood. Then we'll go back to the phones. 800-348-2551. 3 years ago. Actually, it's not that quick. All right, James, keep it short next time. 3 years ago, I planted several young arborvitaes on the northwest side of my house near the top of a forested hill. Last winter, I wrapped the now 12-foot trees in burlap, but I believe I did so too snugly and choked off sap circulation to the needles under the burlap. In the spring last year, the trees were very damaged by desiccation, I assume either by the strong winds or by my overly stringent binding of the boughs beneath the burlap. Nonetheless, the trees have bounced back this year, but I'm concerned about wrapping them again, lest I do it incorrectly. Could the panel please comment and also say if deep watering is a good idea to begin in the first week of October?
Absolutely.
Yeah, deep watering is the way to water plants. You know, we always say less frequent deep watering is really good to encourage. Your roots are opportunistic. So if you do a lot of shallow watering, the water's only going down a couple of inches, then you're going to encourage the root system to come up to that water zone. Uh-huh. You want to encourage the root system to go deep. And so deep watering is definitely
this
really
sounds
good.
Like a windy spot, too. He's on the northwest on a hill. Yeah. It's not the spot I'd plant arborvita, number one, because they can windburn because they've got a lot of leaf surface.
How'd you say that? Did I say it wrong?
Arborvita.
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 I was saying arborvitae.
Arborvitae.
I've heard it said.
Tomato, tomato.
Northwest. Tomato, tomato. Yep.
Clematis, but clematis. If he wraps them with burlap lightly, I don't know how tight he did it, but if you wrap them lightly around there, that's not going to hurt them. I've never seen that hurt them.
Definitely not going to hurt them.
As long as it's burlap. If you're using some other kind of cloth or plastic, don't do that.
That's right. But burlap, no. I don't actually have them touching the foliage. I have it just like maybe a half an inch away.
Don't think it's likely that it was too snug? He said it was too snug.
If he bound it up really tight, it's possible.
If he bound it up tight, it definitely could be possible because now it's in constant contact.
It was also, as Dale Ellis said, last fall was dry.
It was.
So it may have burned just because they weren't watered well.
That's
hydrated going into the winter.
Yep. So this is a good time to start the watering.
Absolutely.
Yeah, if you didn't already start doing it. And, you know, the good thing about arborvitaes are that they will bounce back. They can take a lot of hits, and you could prune back foliage to old wood. That's why a lot of times deer come in, they hammer arborvitae, and then what do you see? You see it all regrow. And
the other thing that happens is arborvitae leaf miner is an insect that shows up early in the spring and looks like winter burn.
True.
Sometimes you've got an insect problem.
Yeah, and I have actually over the years seen severe cases of arborvitae leaf miner. If it is leaf miner, you can ID it pretty quickly.
Yep.
By looking at the end of the foliage, and if the ends of the foliage have little open holes, so you see it dead, but a little open hole right at the very tip, that's where the insect chewed its way through and came out. And if it's just like a winter burn, you're going to see brown foliage. You're not going to see those little exit holes. And you might need a hand lens to see that.
Early in the season, I've even pulled the needles apart up at the end, and sometimes you see this itty-bitty little worm. It's like a thread.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's go to our phones. We'll go to Debbie in Grafton. Hello, Debbie.
Hello there. Thank you for everybody for being here. I have a couple questions. One with garlic. What's the best mulch? I grew some last year, did A-okay, but I've been reading some say leaf matter, which I wouldn't use any this year because so many have funguses and stuff, but some say sticky straw. Somebody said, hey, I need advice on that. Also, when to plant scallions? I went to a garlic festival and I got a little bag of scallions. I don't know if I got snookered or not, but those are my two big questions.
Okay.
When to plant scallions and the best mulch for garlic.
Personally, I like straw.
Yeah, I like straw for the garlic. You do want to make sure that it's a nice clean straw.
Yep.
And most of the straw that is the cleanest is rye straw. Other people, you can also get oat straw.
I asked somebody about rye straw and they said that didn't exist. Where do you get rye straw?
Oh, there's a number of farmers that grow rye straw. I don't know if any of the garden centers.
Some people even harvest it before it seeds, so you don't have the seeds to deal with.
Right, yeah.
But you just have to ask around. I don't know anybody in particular.
Yeah, and over all the years I grow garlic, I've never been fussy with the straw. I don't use hay because hay definitely has got weed seeds in it, so you don't want to use hay for that.
Yeah, yeah.
But I've never even asked what type of straw. I just look for a bale of
it's easier to get wheat straw, and it works
really well. And when it breaks down, it creates a real nice, rich kind of black soil underneath it. And I've done really well with scallions now.
She had a question about scallions.
Yeah, so scallions, you can plant some now. I would start them in what I call plugs first. I wouldn't put it directly in the ground. This is if you have a protected spot for them. And by protected, I mean covered, like a cloche or something like that. Otherwise, I would wait until next spring and, again, start them in a seed-starting mix and then transplant them.
All right, Debbie, thanks for the call. While Debbie was on the phone, we tried Sea Treasure, this raspberry from the very
good.
Best. Yeah.
That was really good.
What's the deal?
So that is Crimson Treasure. It's a relatively new variety that's directly out of the Cornell breeding program. Uh-huh. And we tested it as a numbered selection several years ago. And I told the breeder, I said, you've got to name this one. This one is really good. It's pretty late. It's one that I covered last night worrying about frost. But the number of berries that are yet to come, we've been harvesting this since probably the third week of July. Wow. And it's maybe 50% of its way through the crop right now.
Wow.
It's still flowering away and lots of fruit.
Till Thanksgiving at this point.
Yeah, we did have raspberries until the middle of November last year.
When do you shut down the berry patch for the season?
So depends what you mean by shutting down. We take orders for products through Thanksgiving.
Oh, okay. So you're going to be going at it for a while.
Yeah.
And then while you were talking just now, I assume the sea is crimson again?
Yes.
Crimson
Beauty.
Crimson Beauty.
And yeah.
That's also an interesting one, although I think Crimson Treasure is, I like that one better.
Okay. Well, Crimson Beauty is one of them that we tasted last year as a numbered selection.
Aha. Uh-huh. And it made the cut.
It got named last winter. And so it's still, the home gardeners won't be able to get it in the commercial trade yet, but give it a couple years.
Okay, cool.
It's an earlier variety, so it's about done. That's why
there weren't
there's
that
not
many
berries in there.
I thought Fred got to them before the show. Yeah. All right, let's go back to our phones. Nancy and Wilton. Nancy, you're on.
Hi.
Hi.
I had a question about hazelnut bushes, which I've got a whole bunch of them to plant, but I'm going to switch real quick.
Oh.
And that is to talk about peach trees. I've got a 3-year-old set of contender peach trees that I planted.
Yep. All right.
And last year they produced a crop. And I was trying to figure out how to prune them and should I take all the peaches off? Should I let it do that? This year, bumper crop. They're 30 feet tall, 3 years old, huge.
Wow.
Wow.
Problem is that they're also spindly. So they're covered in peaches. And I finally got desperate. I went out and started knocking peaches off because one of them actually broke a limb.
Yeah.
What am I doing wrong?
That's pretty common with peaches. They get so much weight. And you have to, I think that Fred will agree, you got to prune it to reduce the amount of peaches that they're going to produce so you don't have as much weight.
Yep. But what you're doing is obviously pretty good.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's sort of a mixed feeling sometimes. Do you want to prune it to reduce the amount of fruit that you get and make the branches stiffer? Or do you want to just let it grow, kind of let it do its thing? And then when those branches get pulled down and when they start to hang it, like instead of being more upright branches, the fruit actually trains them to be more weeping, kind of downward pointing branches. And those branches, you get a lot less sprouts and suckers and water sprouts that you got to prune from. So when you get suckered into pruning and stiffening branches and doing this, then it becomes kind of like, okay, every year I got to start to do this.
Uh-huh. So it's like going to a chiropractor.
Right. So so sometimes, you know, letting it sort of develop a more weeping form ends up being less work for you overall. And the plants a lot of times will call out what they can't handle. But, I mean, it sounds like your plants are doing really well.
What I see at the orchards with peaches is that they really come down low, but they put supports under them to hold the branch up.
Uh-huh. That's true, too.
So they're actually trying to take the weight off by supporting the branches.
A lot of times they will. And, you know, that's just a lot of times you can make one out of cut some kind of, you know, small scrub stick or tree that you've got growing in the property line.
2x4s.
And you kind of prop them up under those.
Go ahead, Nancy.
That's what I ended up doing because I ran into a farmer who I bought some other fruit from, and I noticed she had peaches there, and I said, what are you doing? I told her my situation. She said, we prop them up.
Yep, yep. Right.
Came home. I made my little props, and the ones that I propped up, they held up okay, they did, but one of them that I propped up snapped the branch right off, so it's like 10 feet above my head that snapped off.
Ouchie, okay.
How do I deal with that break? Do
a,
I just
need
cut
a pole
it clean?
Pruner.
Yeah, so you want to cut back either to a lateral branch, so you take that main branch that broke, and if you trace it back to where it goes closer to the, you know, as it gets closer to the trunk, you might find another branch that's, you know, sort of a side branch off of that main branch, a lateral. And then you can cut back to that lateral, and then that lateral, ideally, if it's pointing in a direction that you'd like, that becomes the new branch. If there is no lateral and it's just like a stub, then I would recommend cutting it back to the point of origin, which would be, in this case, the trunk.
All right. Nancy, thanks so much. Let's go to Daniel in Catskill. Daniel, you're on.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
I have recently finished building a natural swim pond. And it's getting late in the season, and I've been able to take at least a few swims with this great weather we've had. But I'm interested in planting some aquatic plants in there to help keep the water clean. Being late in the season, I'm wondering if there's anything I can put in that's going to do well and overwinter, or is it just too late to get anything in?
All right. What do you think, panel?
I don't know if I'd bother. I think that a lot of plants are going to develop there all on their own, depending upon the amount of water movement and the depth and the temperature. It'd be hard to find water plants commercially right now. You'd have a better chance to find them in the spring, but you could. I don't know that I'd bother planting them right now.
Anybody else? No?
No, I tend to agree with him.
Daniel.
Okay. Wait till spring then, huh?
Yeah,
wait till
I'd
spring.
Wait till
you're going to get a lot more availability.
Yeah.
People at this, you know, stage of the game,
it's done.
They're kind of shutting down the season. And if you did find them, I mean, you don't. You know, I mean, I guess if you're looking for a bargain, sometimes you can find. You know, call
sometimes.
Around. Sometimes you can get lucky, but otherwise, I'd wait till spring.
Daniel, thank you for the call. All right, we've tried the Crimson Blush just now.
Yep.
Very good.
Very good.
These are up there for me.
Yes, the Crimson Blush is also a new one just this year, just got named last winter.
Okay.
For the home gardener, be looking for it in a couple years. These are really distinctive in that they do get very tall, but the flower clusters on the plants are absolutely amazing.
Wow.
That they will have literally over 100 flowers on one cluster.
Wow.
You will need to train them up pretty high. We actually have a wire about 6 feet up off the ground because the plants will get 8-9 feet tall in a tunnel.
Now, you said something interesting that I think a lot of people don't realize. When something new like this comes out, you can't buy it for a while because it takes a long time for the people who are developing it to grow enough to have anything to sell. You don't manufacture these things.
Okay.
It takes a while.
Yeah. So I would be looking for Crimson Blush in the commercial trade or in the home garden trade, and probably I'm guessing maybe about 3 years.
I would say.
The Crimson Treasure should start to be available now. That is being grown by a nursery in North Carolina by the thousands. So that one's available. But Beauty and Blush are ones that people can look forward to in the future.
All right. Let's go back to
treasure
our
Treasure and Blush are my two favorites.
I like the Blush a lot. Ooh,
yeah.
And
that Treasure is a really good one. Taste it.
Autumn Britain is pretty dang good, too. I think the old school variety there. Let's go to Kingston. John, you're on.
Hello. My question is, why has my lilac gone into full bloom in October?
That's like our third question
of
the day.
Yeah,
we're seeing that around the area. It's mostly because of the lilac blight, that fungus that kind of wiped out a lot of the leaves.
Uh-huh.
And I'm assuming that happened to yours?
Yes.
Yeah. So when that happens, the plant's kind of like, it's shocked. And now it's like saying, maybe I'll put out some new growth. It kind of almost
thinks, we got a little rain. It cooled off. Might be time to flower.
Right. It kind of confused in a way, almost thinking it's spring. You know,
it'd be
so
okay.
It'll be fine.
Anything I should do?
Nope.
No.
Enjoy them.
Anything I should do?
Nope. Just enjoy them.
Okay.
You might get a few less blooms on that plant this coming spring, because anything that bloomed now those flower buds are spent. So, you know, it's not going to be, those flowers are not going to be available for the spring. So you might get less blooms on it.
All right. Father Tony writes in, wondering if it's time to trim back the forsythia bushes and also time to plant tulip bulbs.
to plant tulip bulbs for sure. You have weeks to do it, but yes. And forsythia depends on whether you want any flowers next year. If you trim it now, you trim off the flower buds. But if you just want to make it smaller and you don't care about the flowers next year, you can trim it
wouldn't
now.
Wouldn't you want to have flowers?
You generally would. So the generally answer to that would. One is you know, wait till spring. The time to prune forsythia is immediately after it gets done blooming.
This email from Karen about heirloom tomatoes. I've been saving the seeds of heirloom tomatoes for several years. This year, my favorite tomato, black cherry, did not come true to parent. I wonder if the seed of the parent was contaminated or the flower on this year's plant was crossed with some other plant.
The flower on this year's plant was crossed with another tomato. For an open pollinated variety, they don't usually cover the flowers, but if you want to make sure that you're getting seed and have self-pollination, you actually put a little mesh bag over the flowers so that you can't get a bee in there cross-pollinating it.
Black cherry is an heirloom? You brought black cherry, didn't you?
Yes, I did.
And it's amazing. I think it was my favorite one.
Yeah.
And that's an heirloom?
It is an heirloom type.
Ah.
Yeah.
That's a great, great variety.
Yeah.
This one's from Elizabeth. Any suggestions about how to stop Creeping Charlie for good?
Smother it.
Black plastic. Keep digging it out. It's just one of those ones where you got to keep after it. You got to keep going and going and going.
You do. Persistence pays off with that one. It's like kind of bishop's weed. You know, how do you get rid of bishop's weed permanently? Yeah. We're still trying.
Aaron in Voorheesville writes, what's the best material to wrap blueberry bushes and other shrubs so the deer don't eat them? Aaron's in Voorheesville, and there are plenty of deer there. So what do you think?
Burlap, I would assume. I mean, I've never wrapped a blueberry bush. We don't have deer problems.
Deer fencing. You could just do like deer fencing.
With burlap on deer, sometimes they'll paw it off. They'll just use their feet and take it off. So I'd put a wire cage around them.
That's what I'm thinking. Just like a regular deer fence. Yeah.
All right. Yep. Well, we're about out of time here, and this was a fun show today. Thank you for calling, everybody. Bob Graves, how do people find out about Fadigan's?
Well, we're at Fadigan's.com, and we're 2.5 miles west of the Northway on Route 7 at 1140 Troy Schenectady Road.
Man, I was in the big box hardware store over the weekend. Full Christmas stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Are you doing the same over at Fadigan's?
Yes.
You know,
not
you,
full.
You commercial type sick of me.
It takes weeks to set that up. And, you know, people come in and complain and say, oh, Christmas already, and then they go buy some.
Hey, Delilah, how do people find the Berry Patch?
TheBerryPatch.net, or where you can place an order, or come see us at the Troy Farmers Market on Saturdays from 9 to 2.
Fred Breglia, the Landis Arboretum.
Yeah, we're at 174 Lape Road, Esperance, New York, and our website is landisarboretum.org.
Well, thanks to Fred and Bob and Dale Isla for being here today. Support comes from Prestwick Chase, offering maintenance-free housing options for 55-plus active adults with 1- and 2-bedroom apartments on cottages in historic Saratoga Springs. 518-584-7766 to schedule tours. At Capital Region Classical at Union College, opening its season with the British brass ensemble Septura in a program celebrating Gershwin and his influences, Sunday, October 19th, 3 p.m., capitalregionclassical.org. Thanks for calling today. Sorry if we didn't get to your question, either via phone or via email. These folks will be back in 2 weeks. Our fun drive will be done thanks to you, and they'll be back for a gardening show. Thanks to Mike Bowen, our engineer. Susie Checkeye screened the calls. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow on Food Friday, it's Barbecue Summit 2 with Bill Fletcher and Russell Mattson. I'm going to eat 30 burnt ends. We'll see you tomorrow at 2.